Jema. So in the continuing series on Mother's Collected Works, Volume 12 on Education, now we come to a very interesting subject, especially because educators are pretty much confused as to what it is and how to go about it, and equally the spiritual seekers, because it actually belongs to that kind of query, wonder what really it means, because it's something new, at least in terms of the terminology used by Sri Aurobindo. So the subject is psychic and spiritual education, and in the passing toward the end, Mother also speaks about the supramental education. So what exactly it is, just to have a little bit of clarity, what is the difference between the psychic, spiritual and the supramental? They are not synonymous. So we take it in a very simple way, going by the way the Gita reveals to us that the divine is one, but he manifests himself or expresses himself at three different ways, poises. So first is the origin, the source, which is the transcendent. So that's the ultimate mystery. None can name it, none can speak anything about it. So that is the transcendent. And then the second is as the cosmic. Now, what is meant by cosmic is that there are several layers, several planes of consciousness. All of them the divine has brought out of himself, or the power of the divine has brought out. And these are all part of that cosmic. Because when we hear the word cosmic, we think only the material universe. But there are several universes. And each of these universes, the divine presides over their manifestation. So this is a very large, vast movement of the same divine, which is called cosmic. And the third is in the individual. So this is the transcendent, the cosmic, and then the individual. So in the individual also, a portion of the divine expresses as the Jivatman. Now, Jivatman, why should? Because the Gita speaks about para prakriti jiva bhuta. So it is the para prakriti is the divine mother, if you see. It becomes the jiva and it pushes the jiva. Now why, what is the importance of this little jivatman dwelling in the human being? In the human, it's there in everything, in creation, but as an essence. It's only in human beings that it suddenly picks up through a process of evolution, where the different experiences act as a feeder to wake it up. So the waking up process starts with the human birth, maybe after a couple of human births, and then the process starts and it will go on for quite some time. So what really is the purpose of Jivatman? It's, or we'll come to the subtle difference between Jivatman and the psychic being. So the purpose is, right now we can use it as synonymous. So the purpose is that the divine, when he acts in this universe, in this world, one is he acts through all the various gods, goddesses and all the different beings in creation. But each of them, there is a some deflection, something which, you know, gets distorted in the play. But also something of the divine essence, quality, power, it expresses in the individual as the Jivatman. So this is something we can say the purest portion of the divine, but it's a portion. Carrying in its essence, it is the divine. We can't speak of, it's the essence, everything is the divine. But as an individual, in the individual consciousness, there is an essence of the divine, a portion of the divine, which becomes the Jivatman. But the difference is, while the divine, for instance, people often ask that since you are the same in essence, so can I create universes like this? No, not that way. So in each individual, something of the divine, which has been foreseen before creation began, that will express itself through each individual jiva, jivatman. So now we have two aspects of the jivatman. One aspect which is already there existing before the play of time and space. So there the divine, when he wants to become money, brings out within himself multiple little centers of, for the convenience of the image, light. So this divine is, let's say, a Jyotir Brahman. He is all light. But within that, there are some concentrated portions of light. Same in essence. So That's beyond the play of time and space. And these little portions of light, like photons, that's a very good example. In the sun, you have photons. But photon traveling all the way to Earth now starts a new adventure. It is everywhere in everything. That photon enters into mud, that photon enters into, you know, life, at least on Earth, then that photon awakens everything. So there is that element, portion of light which has entered. So this portion, so now Jivatman has two aspects. One is that which is eternally present always with the divine in his transcendent state. So Sri Aurobindo uses the word central being for that. So it's the central being. It is our true center. It has within itself the entire blueprint, the script, the mission which each individual has to fulfill. But a portion of this central being or the Jivatman enters into the play of time and space. In the play of time and space, it becomes the psychic being. So psychic being is the same Jivatman entering into play of time and space, where it goes through life and death and rebirth. And it obviously doesn't die, it is indestructible element. But as it goes through this process, will bring out of itself powers and possibilities. And which power and possibility? The original intended purpose, which is already there inside it. Let's take a very simple example. A baby in the womb. Before the baby is in the womb, the baby is in the mind of the parents. So that's why conception has a double meaning. There is a conception, parents want a baby and they have this idea, my baby, you know, each one has their own idea about the baby. So then this is the conception. This is an indestructible element. It's there always. That will guide the parents. I agree that parents are ignorant, but let's say, for example, they have a conception that the child will be a great being. Now, this conception will keep on molding their relation to the particular child. Whether, you know, in whatever way, because this is the original conception they are holding. Again, human parents are ignorant, so the analogy is only for understanding. Divine parents are not ignorant. So they have in their original conception, each being, there is something very specific for which, you know, that play of time and space, that portion enters. Now, this conception, while it is there, yet it takes a material form as the seed in the womb of the mother. So this is not that cancelling each other. In the mind, it's always there. My baby will, you know, let's say be a hero or a saint or whatever. Or maybe a replica of the parents. Ekoham bahusham. But then it will go through stages. This conception will enter into a material play of form and space. In its origin, in the mental conception, it's formless. It's just an idea. Now that idea enters into the womb and its first journey is through ignorance. When baby doesn't know, even parents are okay, it's growing. They don't start saying he has to become a hero, therefore from childhood. Though some parents who are conscious parents, they start reading stories which will, you know. So then this is the first stage, which is a stage of development, that the Jivatman entering into the play of time and space comes. Then slowly the Jivatman, let's say the baby is born, and then it goes through another level of adventure. And through that adventure, it struggles to express. What does it struggle to express? The original conception. Like Shivaji Maharaj. So mother has dreamed of somebody who will liberate. It's a classic example from the Mughal Empire. And she brings up the child holding this idea in mind always. So there's so many interesting stories about Shivaji, but resisting the temptation to go into it. So slowly it grows into a hero. So this is how the psychic being through lives, and this lives can be when the child is in school. So each class from one to another is, let's say, one life. So something the child learns. What does he learn? Some essence of it. By the time the child is in 10th, he may not remember all that he learnt in, say, standard 2 or 3. And when he is doing graduation, he may not remember much of mathematics. But something we see that the child has learned, gained, the mind has become more supple, and something begins to become clear in the child that this is what I want to do. So the same way as the Jivatman, now in the play of time and space, not the Jivatman which is there as the central being, begins to grow and passes through life and death and rebirth and life, a point comes when it begins to become aware that there is a purpose. And that's why one of the first signs that one is ready to discover the psychic being is that one looks for a purpose in life. If you don't have a purpose and you're happy going, okay, whatever way life is unfolding, it's fine. Actually, though the psychic is there, but it's like in the back seat. It's sleeping in the car, the driver is taking. But the moment one begins to question aim, purpose, why am I here, why am I born? And Mother says, use these questions to, everybody should have these questions, raise these questions to oneself and spend some time, maybe 10 minutes. What is my purpose? So this is one of the ways, even in practical things, how to have psychic education. One is that, ask children what is their purpose when they are reached a certain point. And as you see that they will slowly, you know, something will begin to emerge out of them. Some will say, my purpose is to get a job, some happiness. But one odd person will say, I'm looking for a purpose. So slowly, this is the purpose of creation of an individual psychic being. So that means now that little essence portion has developed into a psychic being. So that's when the search starts. And when the search starts, there are helpful elements, there are harmful elements. So helpful elements are basically three things that the psychic being gets easily nourished by. And they are truth, beauty and good. So the meaning of these begins to change as the psychic being evolves. And the other thing is its nature is love. So it begins to, you know, grow through love. It wants to hold the universe. Love is the last thing which comes in the stage of evolution. In the life, Divine Shrivindo says that in the beginning it's all hunger, that is death. But as love begins to emerge in various ways, and of course it goes through its own challenges, journey, and I'm not talking about that. But that is a sign that now the psychic being is ready, it's ripe. And then it changes into not truth, good and beauty, but changes into search for God, the ultimate reality, the divine reality. All this is a sign that one is ready for the emergence of the psychic being. Before that, you may give a lecture, talk, people may read, but one is not ready. So this is the psychic education. Within time and space, the play of the divine or the role we have to play in terms of being a vehicle of the divine or instrument of the divine or the purpose of the divine within us, that is the psychic being. So what is the spiritual part now? Now we enter not just individual but the cosmic manifestation. So we discover the psychic being. We are no more identified with the ego, though the ego is there as a personality. So there is an operating framework. Let's say that I have discovered my soul and I am living in the house. And fine, I am very happy. I am all the time there. And that purpose I am fulfilling in my everyday activities. But then there comes another aspect of this quest. And the quest takes the form of going beyond the limits of whatever is manifested in the universe. Aspiration for infinity, aspiration for the internal, aspiration for the ultimate truth. So the first stop for the quest of truth is psychic being. That's our individual truth. But then you want to understand the whole truth of the cosmic manifestation. And from that psychic door, one begins to enter into what is known as ascension. Ascension means we start going beyond the mental framework in which we are enclosed. And we start going beyond the mental framework towards higher and higher truths which have not yet manifested. And you discover till we reach the source and the infinite and the eternal. We pass beyond space and time. We touch the formless core of things. It leads to very profound change of experiencing the divine in all. We can equally say the same oneself in all, but not with that little ego personality. So now what is left? What is supramental education? Now, this discovery that there is the one self in all and all is in the one self is a completely liberating discovery. This itself is the first step of liberation. This liberates us from all forms, names, systems, philosophies, everything. Some people may call it nirvana, some would call it, you know, stillness. Doesn't enlightenment words don't mean much here because the experience is identical. But now, some souls, some psychic being, marked from the beginning actually, they begin to, when they reach at this discovery of the infinite, eternals, beyond space and time, they wonder, Can things change here? Can they become better? Can some way this divine truth they have discovered, divine love, divine beauty, divine ananda, can this be brought here and shared by all? Because they begin to feel wideness. And in this wideness, they begin to experience that, well, I am to seek only my good and my salvation is selfish at the root bottom of it. So they want to bring upon this earth that which they somewhere glimpse within them. And that's when supramental comes in. So supramental means that which has not yet manifested. That new force, that new possibility, if that can be brought down and activated here, is supramental education. Meaning thereby, for psychic education one goes within, for spiritual education one goes above, and supramental education is from above downwards. That's the basic thing. Because that will change the conditions of life upon earth. This is the broad framework, and with this we'll just read quickly some of these passages. Very beautiful. And so she says, but first he says, so far we have dealt only with the education that can be given to all children born upon earth and which is concerned with purely human faculties. So physical, vital, mental, everybody. Actually, not all are really ready for the psychic education. And yet in some way, some kind of introduction of seek the purpose of life, don't give them. This psychic education is not moral education. It's not ethical. They come in the way of the psychic discovery, as we shall see. Subsequently, with psychic education, we come to the problem of the true motive of existence. So this is where psychic education, because we may know everything, but yet we may not know the purpose. So what is our purpose? We may say mechanically, well, because I have read it, purpose is divine, God is my purpose. Or we may say, well, I want to do this work, I want to earn money, because this is still in the nascent stage. The moment it comes, it will never be satisfied within the framework. It wants a purpose which is deeper and higher. So that's where mother says it's a sign that one is getting ready. The purpose of life on earth, the discovery to which this life must lead, and the result of that discovery, the consecration of the individual to his eternal principle. And when we discover it, then life is finished. Like now we know that this is what is life about, at least as far as the individual is concerned. That's what one has to do. Of course, there is a process, there is a seesaw, there is one leg here, one leg there, until finally. So this is how it goes. One thing she remarks, that it need not necessarily be the mystic notion of God. So we have a feeling people who are religious by nature, they are closer to the psychic being, may not be at all. At one place, Shurvinda even says, some asuras are very religious. They go, it's not about visiting a temple every day, doing all the rituals, observing all the fast. No, one may be very satisfied with that. So one need not even use the word God. That's the beauty. One may use the word truth. One may use the word raison d'etre of existence. What is the reason why I'm here upon earth? So we have to understand the nuances. There is no fixed dogmatic thing that, you know, or in this religion a person can discover the psychic being, other religions are condemned. It goes beyond all these notions. So she says, notion of truth, it can be replaced. The notion of God may be replaced by the more philosophical notion of truth. Truth is something which is common seeking to everyone. And still the discovery will remain essentially the same, but the road leading to it may be taken even by the most intransigent positivist. So positivist, I know, those who would say that only what I can touch, what I can smell, what I can hear is true. I don't believe in anything other than that. Mother's own physical mother was a positivist. Not positive thinker. They're not positive thinkers. But they're called positivist. And there's a whole philosophy called positivism. Even he can take it. Okay, let me discover what are the limits of my vision, limits of my hearing, and he can go through that route. Because it's a search. Positivist is also searching, but he says it must be within this framework. So if his search is genuine, he will go beyond the framework. So he says that. And so here she defines roughly the psychic being. So psychic being, the word psychic comes from the psychological center. This is the, and the word psyche is originally from the Greek, where they use the differentiation between psyche and soma. So soma was all that pertained to the world of phenomena, appearances, body, and the psyche was the core. Later on, the psychologists have usurped this word. And originally, psychology should be the science of the soul, but it has become now science of the mind. So that's a little bit of so. But the word originally means the soul, the essence. That's how the Greek word psyche means. So here she says, one could say, for example, that the creation of an individual being is the result of the projection in time and space of one of the countless possibilities latent in the supreme origin of all manifestation, which through the medium of the one and universal consciousness takes concrete form in the law or the truth of an individual, and so by a progressive development becomes his soul or psychic being. You know, the corresponding word in the Gita is very interesting. Sri Krishna says para prakriti jiva bhuta. So it is the para prakriti, we know, is the divine mother, the divine power that projects itself, projects and becomes the jiva. Now there is a term, how does it work upon the jiva? There is swabhava and swadharma. That's why when mother used the word in for the center of education, she defined free progress as the progress guided by one's soul. Swabhava is literally the divine mother's impulsion in the creature, the divine power impelling the creature. That's its purpose. But it is covered by ignorance, deflected by desires, ambitions, seeking for greed for wealth, for lust for power, all these things. But actually this divine mother's projection as the jiva, para prakriti, that's why the psychic being instantly recognizes the divine mother. And that's why when it was asked that how to know that one is, you know, has been called to the path, of course one of them is the call for the yoga, second is recognition of the divine mother. Psychic being has reached that stage of development. So because it has been projected, the divine power has arranged it like that. We like to, better term is divine mother, power seems very impersonal. And that's why it is the child of the divine mother. And through the swabhava, it pushes the jiva into action. So the closer we go to the psychic being, the more we discover the swabhava and the swadharma. See how mother is describing, going beyond the terminology. What is she saying? Swadharma, the right law of one's own inner nature, inmost nature. How she is saying? Through the medium of one and universal consciousness takes concrete form in the law or the truth of an individual. And so, by a progressive development becomes his soul or psychic being. It is the truth of our being and the law, true law of our being. So, truth of our being is the swabhava, how the divine is expressing himself in us. And that which will lead to the expression, the true law of one's being, becomes the swadharma. See how beautifully, she doesn't use these words, but this is exactly what she is talking about. So then we go to, and of course one can read essays on the Gita, Shivinda speaks about all this, swabhava and all that. So what is needed really to discover it? Most important is will. Obviously, it's not something, ultimately at some point the discovery is spontaneous. But that happens because there is a preparation which has gone. Just like the last peck of the hen on the egg releases the chick. But before the last egg, there is a long period when nothing is happening inside. And the mother hen is sitting and brooding over the egg. So that is the tap or the tapasya. The will has to be sustained in its effort because it's a, after all, a great discovery. So she says the discovery of the psychic being is a personal matter. You can't make people sit inside and start talking about. So it's a personal matter. But as I said, in the school level, love for truth, good beauty, the qualities, for instance, sympathy, courage, fearlessness, these are qualities of the soul. Love, gratitude, all these are emerged from the soul. If children can develop these things, then we are feeding the psyche being. Even through stories, there are beautiful stories Indian thought, and you know, they can nurture the psychic being. Love for the divine stories of bhakti and bhakta, all that, you know, helps in the nurturing the psychic being. Not like, okay, we'll sit with closed eyes and go into the heart. That's, you know, people start conjuring all kinds of things and they come up with very fantastic things. Okay, nothing wrong, but this is it. Why? Because it requires a great, the discovery is a personal matter and a great determination. Touches can come, glimpses can come, but that's not like joining it, becoming one with it. A strong will and an untiring perseverance are indispensable to reach the goal. Each one must, so to say, trace his own path through his own difficulties. So each will have his own challenges. Why own difficulties? Because each is meant to express something unique of the Divine Mother. So the difficulties also come accordingly. They are precisely, like Mother speaks of the shadow, they are precisely meant for this individual to facilitate in the path, journey through that particular obstacle. So if you are busy pointing out other people's difficulties, then we are far from the journey. So she says that normally it is better to go to somebody who has discovered. That's what we all know. So first she says, and that is why, because there are so many difficulties and this is so valuable that there are so many things which come in the way. And that is why anyone wanting to take up the adventure usually first seeks out some person who has successfully undertaken it and is able to sustain him and enlighten him on his way. This person is not going to give instructions, but he sustains the journey on the way because he has gone through the challenges and knows, so you know that well. For instance, one thing, that persevere with faith. Maybe when it is darkest, dawn is nearby. These are the little lamps on the way. Persist. Ultimately, the Divine Mother, that is going to be the victory, the triumph of truth. All these little indications on the way are required. So this is the best, and they can help in that, facilitate in the process. Yet there are some solitary travelers. So what she is going to write is for those who don't want to take that road. They want the road, difficult road. They don't want to go and let's say take help from anyone. So it's okay. You can take, the guru is inside. You can do that. So now what she is saying is about those. So we must understand the difference. One is leaning on grace, love for the divine, which we will not see mentioned here because it's for solitary travelers. So people often take it that, but if you read letters on yoga, Shobindu will say love, devotion, faith, surrender are the surest way to discover the psychic being. But here she is not writing. Why? Because you want to go your own way. Can you? Yes. Anybody can go because it's the nearest divinity inside us. So that's what she's saying. And this was basically, as we know, these essays came because Pranabdha wanted this, mother, all this is fine. What about people who don't have faith, you don't know, you know, they don't like this terminology. And mother herself has said there are people who are practicing yoga or on the path of yoga, but they don't know. There are even people who have experience and they don't know. And it's so beautiful. Oh, I had this experience. They have the experience, they don't know. So, they don't put a name tag over it. That's what it means. So she says the starting point is to seek in yourself that which is independent of the body and the circumstances of life, which is not born of the mental formation that you have been given, the language you speak, the habits and customs of the environment in which you live, the country where you are born, or the age to which you belong. Now we can understand that how these things can become a serious obstacle. They are meant to facilitate. For instance, religion is meant to facilitate you toward that discovery. But religion can become a bar if it entraps you only in the externals. This ritual, that thing, this custom, that tradition, then it can become a bar. So it's meant to facilitate. For example, when I remember as a child reading the Ramayana and the Kevat Sambad. Much later I came to know it's not there in Valmiki Ramayana. I said, thanks to somebody who introduced it. And though it's not in Valmiki Ramayana, but when you read Ramcharitmanas, you begin to weep. Why do you begin to weep? After all, what is there? It's the boatman asking Lord Rama, he is a king, to take. That's how most people will take it. But when you read it, because you know, it nurtures your soul. You are the boatman and he is the divine and you know, your master, and you seek him that, see, I can do only this much. And then you remember, and similar story of Dhyuman Bhai, where he said, Mother, I will do your work, you do my work. I'll do your work means you give me this work, that I have to clean this thing, a place, I'll manage the account, I'll do it. My work means liberation, transformation, you do it. This is nothing else but story of Kevat. So it's a universal truth which has been brought. But if you put it in a totally rigid framework that you must do Lord Rama's bhakti and that only in this particular way, do this particular mantram, go to the temple and this particular posture, then slowly even Rama will not like it, you know. Because see, he liked that Kevat, no? he liked Jatayu, he liked, you know, Ganika, Jamil, Byad, Gid, Gajad, Kaltaregana. He is not a slave. Divine is not a slave of externals. And the more we try to tie him to externals, the more he escapes, because he is infinite and eternal. So this is what we have to remember. And so the less we are attached to these things, Shivabindu and Mother are not saying discard all of them. They are there as a framework. You are born. You don't want to hurt somebody or whatever. So you are there. It's okay. You may or may not. But you should know that this value is very, very relative. You may have completely outgrown it. And so you don't have to be trapped in that or identify yourself with that. Because your identity has to be the divine. That's how the mother says. When you come to yoga, all other identities have to be subordinated to this one identity, one religion, one family, and that is the divine. That's what she reminds us. So, she says, what is important? All help you to go beyond the barriers of your egoism. Whatever helps us to go beyond the barrier of your egoism. One of the things, for instance, nowadays, transcontinental travel. It's so interesting. First you feel, what? This is different. It's different. And there are two reactions people have now. Oh, there is something so fantastic. The other is, we are so fantastic. Then slowly you begin to see the same human nature everywhere. It's the same seeking everywhere. Yes, India is very, very special, without a doubt, because it has nurtured and explored the psychic feeling and the spiritual part. But humanity is essentially the same. Same problem, same issue. In Spain the other day, I was talking to all of them, were local Spanish people. None of them Indians or, you know, Hindus or anything. So when I was sitting with the ladies and speaking, I felt it's a typical Indian ladies. They are speaking about their child's problem. Their son is wearing all kinds of American jeans and hip-hop culture and saying they are totally spoiled by the Americans. I don't like them. And Coca-Cola. I was so much smiling. They said, what happened? I said, I feel Indian mothers are talking about their child. Absolutely. Italians, same thing. So, our husband, he just, you know, comes back from work, and I'm not saying everybody is like that, sits on the couch like couch potato. So I said, somewhat like an Indian husband. He said, yes, got it right. And he wants, in the typical style, he wants us to do everything, you know. So I said, very good. Old Indian husbands have moved ahead. Same problems. Same issues, same difficulties. You stop, you know, you're not stuck in that. Externals will be different, naturally. The color will be different, way of speaking will be different. Outer mannerisms will be different. That's okay, that's fine. Like somebody there, if you go, they will hug you. And so I said, no, here we give an embrace and we kiss. I said, yes, but here we do this. And we both laughed. What is there? I don't have to be you. You don't have to be me. It's perfectly fine. So we go beyond automatically. So all that frees us from all these things is helpful. Or simply sympathy, that feeling for the creatures, the dog, the cat, the mouse, the... You begin to feel they are alive. The stone, the snakes. There is a kind of silent language which begins to communicate. She writes here. Flowers speak to you, flower on the ground, that don't just trample over me, I am still alive. Look here. So even just pick it up and put it on the side, stones, everything begins to assume this is the psychic discovery steps on the way. She writes that. She says, what seemed inert suddenly becomes full of life. Stones quicken, plants feel and will and suffer. Animals speak in a language more or less inarticulate, but clear and expressive. Everything is animated by marvelous consciousness without time or limit. And this only one aspect of the psychic realization. So we can see that, you know, this is the way children have to be brought when they go to in nature. They must learn to feel in sympathy with nature. Sometimes simply an exercise. I mean, there are so many things which can come up. Ask a child that, you know, put your ears to the tree and tell me what the tree is saying. Let them come up with their own understanding about what the tree is saying. It's fascinating. One day they will begin to learn and understand. So then she says, well, first and perhaps the most important point is that the mind is incapable of judging spiritual things. All the time people do it. So when they come to ashram and say, where is spirituality? I said, where are your eyes? Because you are looking for spirituality in externals. If suddenly you will see me or anyone walking in a Girva Vastra, even if I am the most despicable creature, you'll say, ah, Guruji ja rahe. Because you don't have the eyes, you have forms you have formulated. If I suddenly say a sloka in Sanskrit, they'll say, ah, kitne jnani hai, pandit hai. See, mother is speaking of sabhava and swadharma without using any of the traditional terms. So this is your problem. It's not. How will you recognize spirituality? Only a spiritual person can recognize spirituality in another. So this is where she says, don't judge spiritual things. All those who have written on this subject have said so. But very few are those who have put it into practice. And yet, in order to proceed on the path, it is absolutely indispensable to abstain from all mental opinion and reaction. So whenever we react, whenever we have opinions, tell yourself, I'm a fool, I'm ignorant. I don't know. You know that movie, Three Idiots? What does he say? Oh, jaapana, main murkh hu, and whatever else. The moment you judge and opine, say, I am an idiot. What do I know? So, she says it's indispensable. Then that knowledge will come when we accept in humility that I don't know. There is something called as true knowledge where you can see things as they are. But that they are not the mental opinions and standards. So that's why till date people still glorify Karna. They glorify Bhishma. And they say, Arjun, well, Krishna was with him, therefore Arjun. Ask Krishna. He'll say, Arjun, you and me are abhinna. We have fought the battle of the ages, life after life. Ask about Arjun from Krishna, he'll tell you. Karna, we lost character. Though in the Mahabharata, they will all, you know, because they can't understand. Mind cannot judge spiritual things. It cannot judge till date why Krishna did what he did. So, anyway, give up all personal seeking for comfort, satisfaction, enjoyment, or happiness. Be only a burning fire for progress and put everything into it. He's not saying shun these things. If they're there, they're there. Don't seek them. If you have a bed, sleep on the bed. It's not a sign of spirituality that from today I'll sleep on the floor and put a brick under my head. But if situation demand that I sleep on the floor, I sleep on the floor without making a fuss about the temperature, the lizard and the mosquitoes. Because so be it. Don't seek all these things. Try to take pleasure in all you do, but never do anything for the sake of pleasure. Whatever works. See, Gangadharan ji is what experiences, supramental experiences. What was he doing? Cleaning the toilets. Very few people know that part. He was cleaning the toilets of the ashram inmates. He was living in a small room, dark and dingy. And if I go into it, it's a story. blessed with Sri Aurobindo's 108 names and the experiences. I mean, a yogi among yogis, rare yogi. And normally, oh, he was a toilet cleaner. Is that true? He was cleaning our minds actually. He never gave a lecture, but he wrote 108 names of Sri Aurobindo. I mean, you try writing, you can't. So this is where she says, try to take pleasure in all you do as mother's work. Never get excited, nervous or agitated. Remain perfectly calm in the face of all circumstances. The calmer we become, the better it is. And because psychic is right there waiting to come. The excitement, agitation are like storms. Never take physical happenings at their face value. They are always a clumsy attempt to express something else. So don't start, you know, judging them by our superficial ideas and reacting to them. Just stay calm and see what is the message that maybe destiny or nature is trying to give you. Never complain of the behavior of anyone. So important. Unless you have the power to change in his nature what makes him act in this way. But she doesn't stop there. She says something interesting. And if you have the power, change him instead of complaining. This is the way the divine acts. And if you don't have the power, why are you strengthening it? Even if supposing your judgment is correct to start with, 99%, it won't be correct. But supposing it's correct, if you complain, what are you doing? Actually, you are increasing it. Whatever you do, never forget the goal which you have set before you. There is nothing great or small once you have set out on this great discovery. Everything, every day activities from morning till night becomes a stepping stone. All things are equally important and can either hasten or delay its success. Meeting people. Sometimes people say, so other day, somebody says, oh, meeting this person, doesn't it distract you? Meeting that person or a particular relationship, does it distract? I say, no, it's part of the divine work. But if you tell the person it's part of the divine work, what? It's divine work for you. Well, Sri Aurobindo says, works of love, ascent of the sacrifice. If you read it, you'll see everything is part of the divine work. You can't. Everything is important. Not like when I'm meeting people, it's not important. Oh, I'm wasting my time or I'm just, you know, I have to give a lecture. No. But when I'm sitting quietly, then meditating, then that is the time when I'm very... everything becomes a feeder into the flame. Supposing somebody is misbehaving with you and to just feel that compassion that look here, here is a person suffering so much deep inside. And you have that look of compassion from inside. And you stay calm. This will help. Everything will help. There is nothing which will not help. Before you go to sleep, concentrate a few seconds in the aspiration that the sleep may restore your fatigued nerves, bring calm and quietness to your brain, so that on waking you may, with renewed vigor, begin again your journey on the path of the great discovery. So few seconds, he's saying. Before you act, and each one has to discover one's own way. One may concentrate a few seconds sitting in a posture, whatever way you want. For me, it's simple. Now I'm feeling sleepy. Mother, you are the pillow. This is not pillow, it's your lap. That's it. A few seconds, you pass. That's the end of the story. Before you act, concentrate in the will that your action may help or at least in no way hinder your march forward toward the great discovery. So important. The words I speak, the actions, not only within me, others. Mother has even said, if you are abusive, if you use slander, means talk ill of others in a degrading language, etc. She has used the word, it's like spiritual suicide. And you are not even saying to that person, you are talking with Mr. X and Y. Oh, you know this person. And the moment you do that, she has said, it's like spiritual suicide. How is it helping? It is not helping us. It's not helping the person. What's the point? And who are we to judge? If at all we can judge. Each one is on their own journey. Leave them. People who are judgmental cannot progress simply because they believe they know. This is a very big obstacle. So humility means I really don't know. It's like so beautiful. Why slot and put categories? You will discover. When you speak, before the words come out of your mouth, concentrate just long enough to check your words and allow only those that are absolutely necessary to pass. Only those that are not in any way harmful to your progress on the path of the great discovery. And sometimes if one does it in the beginning stages, then suddenly one notices, oh, this is not what I should have ever said. It doesn't matter. It's like one becomes conscious more and more. To sum up, never forget the purpose and goal of your life. The will for the great discovery should be always there above you, above what you do and what you are, like a huge bird of light dominating all the movements of your being. Then she says, if you really continue before the untiring effort, it takes years, sometimes decades, but one should persist. And that discovery is the starting point of many other discoveries. He says, before one day you discover, an inner door will suddenly open and you will emerge into a dazzling splendor that will bring you the certitude of immortality. The fear of death vanishes because you know you have always been, you know that you will always be. The concrete experience that you have always lived and always shall live, that external forms alone perish and that these forms are in relation to what you are in reality, like clothes that are thrown away when worn out. Now you see, the Gita chapter 2, what is Sri Krishna doing? Putting Arjun in touch with his psychic being. Look here, Arjun, you have always been and you will always be, and so will all these people. So psychic being frees us from all these external things which impact. Then you will stand erect, freed from all chains, and instead of advancing laboriously under the weight of circumstances imposed upon you by nature, which you had to endure and bear if you did not want to be crushed by them, you will be able to walk on straight and firm, conscious of your destiny, master of your life, because you know the purpose. The rest doesn't matter. You go ahead with the purpose. What will happen? Who will look after you? People often say, who will look after my family? Because always this. Sri Krishna says in the Gita, Yoga Shema Vahamyam. Those who turn to the divine genuinely with the quest, divine takes care. There are such wonderful stories. We hear about Narsi Mehta, all that, you know, we know. I'll tell a story which I know directly. Somebody, I'll not name because people would probably identify, whose child, a person given to mother and his wife given to Krishna, and the daughter developed, only daughter, okay, developed a serious psychological problem. I mean, the worst you can imagine. And so I saw and I would prescribe medicine. She became better and better. But I would always say, see, marriage is a very... don't get into marriage. I understand, because daughter you want, what will happen when you go away. But marriage means who will accept, and if the person accepts, because they are very ordinary, they are teachers, you know, they can't even pay some huge money. And so I said, pray to mother, leave it to mother. And one day their wife faced her, like probably 1 month she is going to go away. That was the situation in her because of illness. She suddenly tells to Krishna, you are her mama, because you are my brother. I have treated you like a brother. And mama is supposed to give the daughter, who kya hota hai, god bharai in Hindus. You are supposed to do it. Bhat. But in English I was looking for a word. The mama in, well, he comes, the mother's brother, he has to come and give things, you know. He says, it's your problem now, I don't care, it's your problem, you have to do it. Within 15 days, strange circumstances, a boy comes, he knows all about her illness, gets married. It's now years, they also have a child who is doing so well. It's a strange story. I also can't believe what kind of... I know another same devotee. And how their child, with challenged child, and again complete surrender. But it's to be done with that complete faith. And how suddenly a daughter-in-law comes here, there is a son who accepts and everything. You know, it's just unimaginable. But that surrender, that psyche can really do that. So this is where, if you really are on that path, then the divine takes care. Or even much before that, if you just have that complete faith and surrender. I have seen people go through difficulties and yet there is a supporting hand which carries them through all. So this what she is describing, not that it should be done for this purpose. Oh, very good, now divine will take care, therefore I must. It doesn't work like that. Can't cheat the divine. So she says, then you walk straight. Now this is about the psychic education. So what is spiritual education? She says, and yet this release from all slavery to the flesh, this liberation from all personal attachment is not the supreme fulfillment. That's about psychic education. It liberates us from all the, within one particular life, the circumstances which are there. So it frees us from all that. We are still in life, but we are not attached to it. So this is important. You are not taking sannyas. You don't need to, because you are inwardly free. So the moment somebody says, I want to take sannyas, the question is, are you attached? So obviously, if you are grossly attached, you need to probably do something about it. There are either steps. So she says, this is not yet the ultimate. There are other steps to climb before you reach the summit. Now you go to the summit. You have discovered the individual divinity. Now you want the source. And even these steps can and should be followed by others which will open the doors to the future. So here what happens with each ascension, there is a new kind of knowledge, new understanding. She has used the word reversal of consciousness. And then one doesn't stop, one goes further, further. With each, there is a wideness, growing wideness, growing wideness. And with this, each wideness, a new kind of knowledge, a new kind of understanding, new kind of love, more powerful love, new kind of joy, kind, I mean, wider, deeper, that begins to emerge. And that, she says, is the what I call spiritual education. So since she defines, so one can say that the psychic life is immortal life. Endless time, limitless space. Endless, limitless. Okay. Ever progressive change, unbroken continuity in the universe of forms. The spiritual consciousness, on the other hand, means to live the infinite and the eternal. You are one with the infinite, you are freed from. Then, earthly realization, you are participating in it, but it's not that which is, you know, you are beyond that always. To be projected beyond all creation, beyond time and space, to become conscious of your psychic being and to live a psychic life, you must abolish all egoism. See the difference. Pride, vanity, I am the one, egoism. But to live a spiritual life, you must no longer have an ego. So the difference between egoism and the ego. Psychic discovery doesn't abolish the ego. It makes it just a supple little instrument for expression of the divine. Because you are still operating within time and space, within whatever is provided to you. But spiritual education takes you beyond. You use this, but you are no more at all in any way identified. So, the most effective starting point for spiritual education now. She says there are so many ways. You can see God, Nirvana, whatever way. But now she gives the key here. In any case, the most effective starting point, the swiftest method is total self-giving. Give yourself to the divine. So the divine takes you up. And then he carries you. This he has given us the shortcut. So, besides, no joy is more perfect than the joy of a total self-giving to whatever is the summit of your conception. For some it is the notion of God, for others that of perfection. If this self-giving is made with persistence and ardor, a moment comes when you pass beyond the concept, start with the conception of the divine, and arrive at an experience that escapes all description, but which is almost always identical in its effects. And as your self-giving becomes more and more perfect and integral, not only thoughts, feelings, this literally she is using the Gita's term sarva bhavena. It's an integral self-giving. So the more we do it, it will be accompanied by the aspiration for identification, a total fusion with that. So that's how there is the urge to join the source, the divine, become one with the divine, a portion of the divine, forever one with the divine. So that to which you have given yourself, and little by little this aspiration will overcome all differences and all resistances. So path is self-giving and aspiration. Increase the aspiration, give yourself more and more integrally. Then what happens, especially with the aspiration, there is an intense and spontaneous love. For then nothing can stand in the way of its victorious strive. Self-giving, aspiration, love for the spiritual education. You can climb to the summits, to the source. So this leads us to the final liberation. So then she says, in the end, now about supramental education. This merging into the formless is the supreme liberation sought by those who want to escape from an existence which no longer holds any attraction for them. So you are anytime, you can be here, you can be there, and it doesn't matter. Whole creation seems like a small little transient something. You're not attached to it. You're not like, oh, this is happening, that is happening. That's one way people can follow. But she says, it is not surprising that they are dissatisfied with the world in its present form. This about the spiritual consciousness. What about the supramental? Because spiritual consciousness goes toward the liberative, the passive, the Purusha aspect or the Ishvara. But supramental is the dynamic, the transformative, and therefore the Divine Mother comes in. So that's what Mother puts it in beautiful way. But a liberation that leaves the world as it is and in no way affects the conditions of life from which others suffer cannot satisfy those who refuse to enjoy a boon which they are the only ones or almost the only ones to possess. So this is where we see Shuddhi, Mukti, Siddhi, Bhukti, or Bhukti, Siddhi, some people put it. So this is the path. Perfection. Perfection not only of the individual but of the race. This aspiration may spring up at some point in an individual. Then he will no more want to merge with that. So she says, they dream. Who dream of a world more worthy of the splendors that lie hidden behind its apparent disorder and widespread misery. They dream of sharing with others that the wonders they have discovered in their inner exploration. And the means to do so is within their reach now that they have arrived at the summit of their ascent. Then they can participate in making this world a better place. Not in ignorance. In ignorance we can only complain, grumble and grudge. We don't even know how things work, let alone changing them. And then what happens from beyond the frontiers of form, a new force can be evoked. Now the transcendent, something which has not come into the creation, which is hidden inside the heart of the Purusha, the Ishvara. We see book 3, canto 2, that you know, even as he stood on being's naked edge, he is confronting the eternal no. And then from the heart, the Divine Mother emerges, which is as yet unexpressed and which by its emergence will be able to change the course of things and give birth to a new world. For the true solution to the problem of suffering, ignorance and death is not an individual escape from earthly miseries by self-annihilation into the unmanifest, nor a problematic collective flight from universal suffering by an integral and final return of the creation to its creator, thus curing the universe by abolishing it, but a transformation. So this we all know. So now here, everything changes. So first step, psychic discovery, she has given us in great detail. Spiritual discovery, three key points are self-giving, aspiration, love. What about supramental education? How does it proceed? What are you supposed to do? Open. That's what we see Sri Aurobindo says, open. Why? Because here she says something very interesting. Of course, this is written in 1952, before the supramental manifestation. So we have to understand the context. So she says, in contrast with the types of education we have mentioned previously, which progress from below upwards by an ascending movement of the various parts of the being, the supramental education will progress from above downwards. Its influence spreading from one state of being to another until at last the physical is reached. This last transformation will only occur visibly when the inner states of being have already been considerably transformed. Physical transformation is the last. For these will be the last to change, and the supramental force can be at work in an individual long before anything of it becomes perceptible in his bodily life. So, if you see Sri Aurobindo's, open to the mother and give yourself to her. Open your mind to the mother means allow her to pour. Don't start doubting, judging, trying to, you know, just let her work. Don't put yourself in small little frames. Often people ask about the ashram. They say that, well, this, that. I said, see, you will never be able to understand the ashram. Why? I said, because it's not a human creation. It's the divine creation. Don't forget that. You cannot understand, however much you may try. You have to live this life to understand. And then also you'll begin to understand a little bit, because you understand, ah, yes, that's how it is. But if you live, of course, I'm saying in a year, ultimately creation itself, what do we understand? We say God's ways in the world. Do we understand God's ways in the world? We don't. But to understand God's ways in the world, we shall tell the whole world of his ways and his cunning. He has rapture of torture and passion and pain. He drives us to weeping, then lures us again. So, he strikes in the spear and is full of compassion. He drives us to weeping, then lures us again. How will we understand these things? Unless we open our mind that, well, let thy will be done, thou alone knowest. If we open our heart to the divine, then we begin to understand something of the mystery of the divine love. When we open our life to the divine mother, then we begin to understand what this life is and what that touch can make it. And when we open, and as we open the body to the divine mother through service, that's the best means of opening. Work is body's prayer to the divine. Then we begin to experience something of a touch in the physical consciousness, and even physical difficulties entrenched for long, they begin to melt away. Jai Maa.